I'd like to call the board to order. This is the quarterly meeting for the pension board, the board of trustees. If you would pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get any further with that, the board, you will remember that one of our members resigned from the corporation. Hence, he was a board member. That board membership went away. And we have a replacement from the Volunteer Fire Corporation and Mr. DeVita. He has been duly sworn in and is officially a member of the board at this time. Rick Stevens, who was the prior board member, is obviously no longer a part of this. The corporation has his letter of resignation, he has been reminded that as a consequence of being on the board and leaving it, that he has to do a final exit financial report. Wow. And I spoke to him about that, and that's in process. Roll call.
Chair Esposito?
Here.
Vice Chair Wilsey?
Here.
Board Member Verzano?
Here.
Board Member Schroeder?
Here.
Board Member Stevens?
Is the DeVita.
No. DeVita.
DeVita, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chair, all members are present.
Thank you. Prior to the minutes, we're going to the minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes of May? Anybody have any comments with respect to it?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So approved. Helena.
Good morning.
Could you take it up on the financial status?
Yes, we're going to start with the proposed annual budget for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2019. It's very similar to the 2018 budget. We're just increasing the amount allocated to actuarial services by $25,000. So the budget will be legal fees, $25,000, actuarial fees, $30,000. Fiduciary insurance, $2,500, travel, training, and admin, $4,000, and plan administration fees of $4,000, for a total budget of $65,500. Like I said, the only increase is in the actuarial fees.
Mm-hmm. And that increased by what?
$5,000.
So this last budget we had was $60,000. This one is up to $65,000. Do we want to sign off on that now, or if the board approves it? Anybody on the board have any comments with respect to it?
No.
Okay.
I'm making a motion to approve the budget.
Okay. Second. Any comment? All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ginger will now present the quarterly report.
For the quarter ending June 30th, we started with cash and investment balance from March 30th at $4,094,735.87. Mm-hmm. We had $20,064.10 in investment earnings. Our expenditures in the plan include pension distributions of $29,797.38, administrative expenses of $99,022.37.
Is that a part of the budget?
Yes. And that is on the second page. I don't know if anybody has their agenda. There is a breakdown of the expenses.
Okay.
So it would show you every line item and who it was paid to.
Mm-hmm.
And then share plan distributions for the quarter was $49,427.70.
Mm-hmm.
So total expenditures were $89,147.45, leaving a cash and investments balance at the end of June 30 at $4,025,652.52.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the second page of that is the breakdown of the expenditures for the quarter.
You provide glasses with these.
I'll make it bigger next time. So we'll have some invoices also for the board to approve.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Foster and Foster invoice.
Just as a clarification, just on the cash balance and so on. This $4 million is the money that we have available for payment of the pension. Consequently, with the $4 million, this is certainly enough to take care of the defined benefit program to a kind of a separation date, if there is one. In other words, I think we can say that the plan is funded well above 100% from a defined benefit aspect. And a residual, even after that, is part of the share plan. Jeremy, that fits in with what you guys are doing? Or?
The share count?
Yeah.
We are managing the share count, yes.
Correct.
I'm not sure if that's...
Just that.
Foster and Foster is our actuary, and their actuary evaluation that was submitted in May showed that the plan was funded, but if there's any questions relating to... the funding and the payment benefits and that type of thing, we'd have to go back to Foster and Foster.
Mm-hmm. But Foster and Foster indicated that at that point
funded,
in time, we were, the plan was funded at about 120-some-odd%, not counting the money that was available through the share plan. Okay. Any questions on that? Yes?
If I may, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time, so stop me if not,
sure.
But you just talked about budget and then you brought up the plot. Your actuarial expenses seem very, very high. Have you all looked into that at all?
Yes, there is an agreement between the board and Foster and Foster that outlines the services.
I mean, have you ever, as far as comparing them with other options, point being, we could, if you were interested, we could provide actuarial services too. My guess is it would come in at an extremely lower cost than this. Now, that said, we're not in the business of selling, so if you all are happy and it doesn't matter, that's fine. I just wanted to let you know that kind of when I saw that number, it kind of jumped off the page, and it sounds like you're having to lift that amount. You're expecting.
Well, I think the board would appreciate anything that you had that you could give us to review.
Okay.
And we could make a comparison
on
that basis.
I'll have Stephanie reach out. She'll just basically need some of the basic numbers. She may already have most of it, but she could put together who would she probably contact if she had a couple questions.
We could probably run this through the purchasing department.
That should go. Normally that's a board.
Right.
The board is who decides.
Yeah.
But who would, if she needed a couple pieces of information to give you all accurate pricing from our standpoint?
You're looking for financial information? Or
no, it usually comes down to members and what category different participants are in, things like that. So if she just needed population data, who would she maybe reach? Have the number already, but just in case, who would she follow up with?
Why don't you adjust it to the board?
Okay.
And whatever information we have, the city will support.
Okay. And again, this is just if it's information you'd like to have, you know.
You're considering the fact that this is for all distributions, all calculations, retirements,
absolutely.
And so on, and the share base.
And if And again, if we're not the right choice for you as far as making any changes and you're happy where you are, that's completely fine. But we work with Foster on other plans.
Yeah. I don't think we could evaluate it without information from you on what it is you would propose.
Oh, of course.
And see how that matches about what we're getting from Foster.
We can put something together so that you can have it for your next meeting if you just want to review.
Any board member want to say anything about that?
No.
Bob?
No. I mean, I think it's our job to look at competing. Mm-hmm.
And you may have some extraordinary costs in here that I'm not aware of. Has lifted that, so at the end of the day, it may not be anything. It was a bigger number than I'm accustomed to.
I think the first move is you make that proposal.
Right. Happy to do it.
Right. Helena, we're back to you.
So we had a Foster and Foster invoice, $3,500, which had been paid in June. Sugarman and Susskind from the last quarterly meeting, $1,102.10. And a Foster and Foster invoice for $965.
Anybody want to make a motion to pay these?
I'll make a motion to pay the invoices.
So we're talking about two invoices, is it?
Three.
Three?
Three.
Okay.
Two Foster and Foster.
No, second.
Okay. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Kay, you have copies of all of these documents?
Yes.
Yeah.
You refer to the agenda?
Pardon me?
Are you referring to the agenda packet?
Yeah, anything that we've gone through so far, do you have copies of that?
Yeah, agenda packet.
Okay. In line with trying to keep the record complete, as may be required by finance and or city clerk, okay? Because one of the things that we had, this stuff was going on that we weren't aware of, and you being the recording secretary needed these documents to be put in place. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is a discussion we're going to have in a little bit anyway. Okay. Elaine, do you have anything else? Or Ginger? Does anybody on the board have any questions? Okay. The second addendum to actuarial services agreement.
Skip legal over here.
The agenda item.
Skip legal
over here. Well, this here kind of comes into here, and I think finance is going to talk about that a little bit anyway. The addendum number two, second addendum. When you see that, do you have a copy of that in your packet? I've got copy here. What we have is a document from Foster and Foster on the actuarial fees and so on. And because of the extra work that had to be done as a consequence of GASB regulation. And the fact that we've been paying, we authorized an increase last time around, for last year, and it was never codified. So we got a document called the second addendum to the actuarial services agreement, and it increases the prices somewhat. And we've been already been paying it. This is a pro forma. So unless anybody wants to, before agreeing to this, which we've already done verbally, I would like to be able to sign off on this document and send it away. But Helena, on this here, the comments were related to Peggy Calkins, and she's still listed on this document.
So we
would have to revise that, mm-hmm. and then send it back.
Yes, to that, update okay? the contact information, yes.
Okay.
I believe this was originally agreed to by the board previously.
Yes.
Due to the amendments for the requirements of GASB 67 and 68.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was during my predecessor's time. But
right.
I'm assuming that's why this happened and the costs have increased
right.
for the preparation of those two GASB reports.
Right.
So since it was agreed, that was built into the budget, built into the payments, so this is the addendum to be signed.
Yeah. And that never happened. This document was signed off by Foster and Foster on December 15th, 2017. So we've been, working under that assumption all the while. And as I said, this is validation. But if the board would prefer that we circulate this so you can review it, right?
Yeah.
Then you can let us know and.
And by then we'll have the change made.
We'll make the change on that, okay?
Please make sure we get a copy as is and then with the changes for the
yep.
agenda.
Okay. And you have copies, Ginger, right? In case they want to see this, the original and then addendum number one, and this is addendum number two. Mm-hmm. And all this does is keeps up with the costs incurred by Foster and Foster to provide the documents that are required by the state.
I can forward all of those documents to the board. The first, the original agreement,
sure.
and then the ensuing addendums.
Okay.
So you can review it for when your proposal perhaps comes in and make decisions.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will do that.
Okay, mm-hmm. You all right on that? Okay. Dave.
Yes.
You want to talk to us?
Okay. Just for the legal reports brief, just as Chairman Esposito said, please, if anyone has not turned in their Form 1, please do so before September 1st. And the
Form 1 being?
The disclosure form.
Financial disclosure
right.
for individuals.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And the other matter I want to inform you, I was just at the upcoming. There's the upcoming Division of Retirement Conference in Orlando, November 14th through the 16th. That interests you. That's the one that's free of charge.
By the way, anybody on the board have any comments with respect to the financial report? Any problems with that? Many, I don't know if you're not up to it, but the state requires a financial status report on an annual basis
okay.
from each individual. It's not onerous, but it's something you have to prepare, and we can show you copies of it. Yeah. So you need to do that.
I'll email him a copy of it.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
What's the timeline for him on that?
As soon as he comes on, we should get it underway and get it there. And then Mr. Stevens will have 90 days to do the final form on that.
And he can do that by mail, or you can do it by going to the court clerk.
Supervisor of Elections.
Okay. And turn it into them, and then they'll give you a copy of it back that you can keep your file.
So it's recommended to get a stamped receipt copy of Form 1 so that, because we've had problems in the past where they were losing them, so it's always advisable to get a stamp.
Yes, very good.
And just as a piece of advice to you, this is very important because they're fine you heavily.
Oh.
And there's no grace period, no nothing. Okay. You don't, you're fine, and extensively.
Okay.
Fine.
So
really?
Yeah. Goes on and on.
Okay.
It's like the IRS.
This is not good.
So it's in with the Supervisor of Elections in the county in which you live. But if you use the address of one of the fire station here, then it'll be with the county, with the Supervisor of Elections here.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay.
Oh, that's all. That's all for the
legal
report, yes.
We have no documents due, any changes by the state or?
Nothing right now, no.
No. Okay. We had under anything else under new business that anybody has? Going to old business. We had three issues on the board. One is the location for the future board meetings. We had that discussion whether we would be better off doing it here or a preference for doing it at the City Hall. And before we resolve that or try to resolve that. Another item that we had was the recording of the Secretarial Services discussion. In other words, should the board have its own recording secretary from an outside source as opposed to what we're doing now, which is inside? And I guess one of the things that raised that question is that in preparing our documents, it's been decided that it needs to be somewhat, and Virginia, you stop me if I'm going astray here, okay? It's got to be a little more comprehensive. It had to be a little tied together so that everything that was done would satisfy not only the legal, financial requirements, but also the requirements that the city would have for the release of public information. So everything had to be consolidated such that whatever was taken care of during the course of a month or a quarterly meeting, that there was enough documentation there for the city clerk who retains the responsibility for providing public information. In other words, if anybody comes to us looking for public documents, we would refer them to Virginia. And in that case, then, they need to have privy to everything that goes on between the board and the actuary, the League of Cities, and whatever. That kind of cover it?
Yeah, it's a way to streamline all of the boards that are under the city's purview and bring them all together under our one agenda management software that we have. So everything's located in one packet that goes to you instead of the piecemeal that's been going out and taking an opportunity to possibly miss a record.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that all the information that's available to the public is all in one spot so that we can produce it very easily.
And that program that you have, is that something that you would review on behalf of the city?
Correct.
And you would orient that. In other words, everybody that needs to support you would be notified what they have to provide.
Correct. Like in advance, it's always been finance always gets all of the information
right.
and brings it to the meeting.
Right.
It, like we presented today was really a finite package
uh-huh.
where your invoices were all included. The only thing that we didn't get was the addendum,
mm-hmm.
The second addendum that I have a copy of it so we can make sure it gets in there, and then any drafts. We can present that to the board as a whole
mm-hmm.
So that we're not potentially violating any sunshine laws as well, that you all get the information all at the same time, 5 days in advance from your board meeting, and then everything is centralized and maintained in the right way.
And in that effort that you're going to undertake, the recording secretary function would fall into that as well?
Yeah, it would switch over to the city clerk's division, so the Kay wouldn't have that responsibility to do that any longer. It would be Kate Settle or myself that's going to work on producing the agendas as we do for the other boards as
mm-hmm.
well.
And the minutes?
Yes. The minutes are going to be all action only minutes, and then we have the recording available for verbatim for people if they so wish.
Okay, so if anybody from the outside wanted under public information a part of the minutes or whatever took place, they would either have to get the verbatim part, because it's not verbatim minutes anymore, right?
Correct. It's action only. It really never was verbatim.
Okay.
It was question and answer and action.
Uh-huh.
But we're switching all the boards to action only, and then the audio is available on the website at all times.
Board members, any questions on it? Anybody have any comments they want to make with respect to it? In which case, we will have a kind of modification of what we're doing. The responsibility for the records of the board will fall with the city. Is this any kind of a problem, Dave?
I wouldn't say that the responsibility for the records of the board will fall with the city. There's still be with you, but so you'll want to make sure that whatever, and it's from what I heard so far, it sounds like that the records will be kept and made available in accordance with the public records law. But you'll want to make, the board will want to make sure and have to monitor how the records are being available, that everything is still made available.
What they're
so
doing is
be
on behalf yeah. of the board.
Correct.
Okay? So we would have access to everything. We could question anything, and we can direct whatever the board decides needs to be corrected.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Any yeah. problem with that?
So let me just clarify. So you're saying the clerk's office is going to assume the responsibility of the recording secretary or records keeping? Because he said two different things. I just want to clarify what we're talking
about.
It'll
be the agenda taking
okay.
Of all of these meetings, making sure those are put out in compliance with statutory requirements and city policies, the 5 days in advance, producing the agenda, making sure it's distributed to everybody in the timely fashion, and making sure what's supposed to be in the agenda is in the agenda to present to the board.
That answers the question. The clerk's office is going to do.
Correct.
Because at the last meeting we presented reaching out to a third party, recording secretary or administrative services. It wasn't just recording secretary services,
mm-hmm.
but so I don't know. Is this a solution for that, to not employ a third party or not look at that, or?
You have option of hiring a plan administrator, which would take over all the duties with finance doing what they need to do. And then the other, there's services that are out there that are offered by different people that will handle producing all the records and assisting finance with what they need to do. And they would take care of the agendas, they would take care of the minutes, and so that would be encompassed underneath what their services are that the board would be charged for. The clerk's office will just assume over all of them, take it away from Kay and the fire department, and take over the agenda, the minutes, and making sure all the attachments are included.
So it is two different tasks.
Yes.
So and it's important to say that the decision is the board's. This
right.
is that's and we see among our clients any number of variations from you know, there are some plans where the city where someone from the city handles almost all of the tasks, and then other clients where there's a third party who handles almost all the tasks, and we have almost all the variations in between. So the decision is yours. Sounds like the city is prepared to offer an extensive support, which is
right. And that's just what I was clarifying.
Right.
Obviously, I understand the clerk's role is you know they're here to make sure that we have sunshine.
Right.
You know we are compliant with public records laws, etc. But as far as internal administration, then that's another discussion.
So absolutely.
I just want to make sure it's two different topics.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I can provide another option if you want. We actually, for probably close to 75% of our clients, we actually perform everything that you all just talked about, taking of the minutes, building the agendas, all the agendas, all the record keeping, making sure that all the website, we actually manage websites for a lot of our clients as well. That's something that if you all are interested in, I can give you a little bit more information on, and I can even tell you what all that is right now. But we already have a relationship with you. If that's something, if you're looking for somebody to relieve the burden, that's something, as I mentioned, we regularly do and do for the majority of our clients. So that would be very simple for us to step in and take over that role if that's an option you're looking for. And that's... it's a fairly nominal cost. It's $750 a quarter, which guarantees most likely it'll be me, but if not me, well, there's three of us that are on the road traveling doing this. You'll have somebody representing every single meeting. Again, we'll take the recordings, we'll provide the agendas, we'll build the minutes, we'll have
you will do
records.
The minutes.
We will literally do everything. You'll just show up.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that at any time, or we can start at the next meeting, or start a year from now. But that's an option that we'd be happy to help you with, and it's pretty easy to do.
But that really adds nothing, you know, with all due respect.
No.
That really adds nothing to the fact that if the city is willing to do that on our behalf, why would we go anywhere else?
The other question is, who you know, Charlie, you've kept the census records and whatnot of the people that are, you know, the various pensioners and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean for qualification purposes and so on?
Yeah, qualification purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And is that something that is a part of this project?
Yes, and finance is doing quite a bit of that for us now. And Ginger,
yeah.
we give them raw data, and she puts it in form for us and coordinates with Foster and Foster, the actuary, and that's how we build it.
Okay.
So we'll do the rough work. We give it to finance. They do the brush up on it. We take that, review that, and then provide that information to the chief. And the chief, by ordinance, is the one who has to approve the qualification status.
Mm-hmm.
And we on that status, we provide how many years of qualified service you have, how many of the items, and in what regard you satisfied the 50% of, training and the 25% of response and the response to monthly meetings and so on. And all of that is documented now on the sheets that we have that we're doing.
I
don't
have
see
the synopsis.
Pardon me?
I have the synopsis with
right.
the chief's signature on it. I don't have the raw data that creates that.
No, I give that
service.
To you.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I get.
But what you need is when we make transfers, people come in, people come out, people transfer between departments. That all has to be reviewed every year, and we review the year prior that was approved, and then make the changes as necessary. And then we give that back to you, and you do your magic with it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that the city is not keeping any of the bulk package of calls and items like that that
no.
that the
no.
volunteers
that,
are
that's,
out.
That's here.
I'm getting a synopsis of
right.
if they qualify or not, and basically I'm just turning that into a spreadsheet for the actuary.
Where you're getting your data is from the captains. When we start, and it'll be starting in the end of September, they get a package and they go through every individual and they measure them by all of the criteria. And either they make it or they don't. And if they don't make it, then they don't get credit for that year. If they've resigned, then after 1 year, they come off of that list. The way it's been going, I see no problem. And we'd have to do the same thing for anybody else.
Right, but the question isn't the validity of what's being turned in. It's what she's saying, if I'm correct, is you're kind of a middleman. You take what you get and you turn it into someone. Whereas an administrative person would have that and 100% handle it from soup to nuts. I mean, you can cater, you can customize it, you know, like he said, there's a variety of plans that you can look at, but it protects us long term. When you're gone, I'm gone, you know, someone else 20 years down the road, those records are still in one place. You know, right now, if someone asks for records and you got to get them out of your office, maybe they're at your house, maybe, you know, and we're just trying to eliminate that search, you know, because right now it's inconsistent. And I can tell you with the number of board members, members that we have, how many people have come to me and said, hey, how do I retire? I don't know that answer. I'm sitting on the board and I don't know that answer. And I have to say, go to Charlie, you know, and I think that board members should be far well more versed than we are now on if someone came to us and made a request or, hey, what is my current status? I don't know. Let me send you to Charlie. So he has a spreadsheet, you know, and this right here kind of levels the playing field for all people. And that's the reason that I originally had brought up the thought of an outside administrator, because, like I said, they handle their scope of services. It varies based on the needs of your organization, and the prices go with that, of course. Is it quarterly? Is it monthly? You know, those are all questions for the fee, but from what they handle for those fees, it's a very long list of items, and then it's in one spot always. And if you search out for companies, you look at companies that have a deep bench, so in 30, 40 years, they're still there, you know, and you don't have to deal with, you know, retirees or transferring all these boxes of information that we may or may not have. Is it scanned in? Is it digital? Is it not? You know, that's my opinion.
But would the members' question go directly to that administrator?
Yes.
Rather than having
it would be a contact.
To find somebody to get the information.
It would be a contact person for all of this.
And the administrator will take responsibility for the past records as well?
As long as they can assume them. They can only take possession. They can only assume responsibility for what they can get.
One advantage, of course, is that then, as you said, that the board really does, in that case, own and control all of its own records, and you're in complete control of as far as record requests, records disclosure.
Well, the clerk now, have meeting records, but they don't have personnel records.
Right.
You know, and that would, depending on what services we chose, that could be the way. You know, the clerk could still maintain what's public record,
right.
And then the administrator would maintain personal records, which is how it is now. But we just, our go-to person is Charlie, you know, and how quick could he get us a record? You know, because it's a reasonable amount of time as if somebody asks for a record. It is a public board. So,
Cindy, based on what Tim just said about the requests from members and documentation, are you prepared to do that as well? If a member came to you and asked you for information concerning their pension?
That would be for financial. That's going to go through Helena and Ginger. With regards to their beneficiary designation forms and that packet, I don't have access to any of that right now. And I don't know where to get those from. I could go to Ginger and get them from her. As long as she has them and they're updated, then we're golden for that. I can go to HR and get any of the records, because you have to be put in through the HR system as a volunteer in order to be paid. So any of those types of personnel records are going to come from them. Your other records with respects to The volunteers, I don't have access to those, and I don't know where those are. I don't know what they are at this point. Charlie, I'm sure, has them, but I don't know. Like, I would have to go to him to get those as well.
Get what?
Any type of public record that comes out of your volunteer meetings from your members.
Well, it sounds to me that what this task needs to be structured so we know what exactly we're going to be putting on to you or to you. And the records that within that structure have to be provided before we go ahead and do any of this.
Correct. It
doesn't sound like we have a structure at this point.
I can't tell you, again, I can't speak for other administrators, but if you chose to use us to help you with this, there's every
right.
single administrative duty is covered.
I would be interested in seeing what those services are and the structure of your services, because then we can get a better idea as to what we should be putting together, no matter which way you go.
Okay. Yeah, I can put something together again for the next meeting, have a little an explanation.
Could you have something we can review prior to the next meeting?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We'll have it together, and you can have it in your packet.
An outline of some type as to what services that you're going to provide.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I would hate to see this done loosely go to anyone, and then we have to keep deciding what we need to add and what we need to subtract, and then when a member comes for information, then the information is not there. Where is it? We have to go find it. All this information should not be in the hands of any one person. It should be in the hands of an administrator.
Correct. And as you mentioned, every we would fully maintain for years ago, we've been around for 90 years now, we would fully maintain these records ourselves, contingent upon whatever you can provide us, of course.
Right.
I think that outline
would be a good spot for us to start thinking about how it would be structured either way, whether
sure.
I review with you or with Cindy.
Joe Masters. What's the involvement of human resources with respect to hiring and maintaining personnel and maintaining public records?
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
It's kind of hit and miss, like Tim was saying. You know, we rely on information that we get from the members themselves, and if they're not up to date on certain things, or somebody leaves and so forth, we only have everything that we enter and we keep. You know, we work with Kay all the time on some stuff like this. But if that information isn't accurate, or there's a mistake someplace, or you know the date is wrong, then we're going according to that date, as opposed to something like Dan said. Exactly.
What requirements does the city put on you in order to get people on board? I mean, you just can't hire. I'm sorry.
With the new process that we've been going through now, which Kay gets the information first before we do.
Well, however we're operating right now, yeah.
Everything is pretty much all manual, and then we just rely on dates. Tim gives us dates of start dates and so forth, and
mm-hmm.
We just enter it into our computer, and then whenever anything is requested is when we pass it back out, basically right now. So it is a hit-and-miss type thing.
Well, as far as the records that the Volunteer Corporation keeps on its members and the records that the city keeps, it's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
The Volunteer Corporation is a private entity.
Mm-hmm.
Versus what the city HR, the city is a public entity. So we're kind of a mixed bag here. I think that the volunteer records and what they have on personnel, the unfortunate part is 2 years in, a member comes in and says, hey, I moved, I got a new license, I got a new car, I got a new whatever. Is that information for the update transferred over to HR, or is it stopping in our private office? That's another question too, which is another thing. But if it stops in our office and doesn't make it to HR, you know, then now you have mixed information when it comes time to.
Can anything happen if it's not going through HR? Can you even bring somebody on board unless HR gives you the okay?
No.
So they have the data.
Personnel stuff.
Well, that's what we were talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they have to do background checks, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's
something that we do. That's something that HR does, which
right.
is again
HR does
city.
First now. Before we used to do the checking.
Mm-hmm.
Now HR does that
yeah.
first prior to us. And then we bring them on board. And then again, it's all information. But like Tim says, when data changes, unless we get information directly, and we don't always necessarily transfer it over, beneficiaries and so forth. We keep asking members for this, and a lot of times they don't, or if the records are not kept accurately, like I say, if I'm a typo error someplace on a date,
mm-hmm.
it would be a problem.
Is there anywhere, like what I'll call a formulary, in other words, something that tells someone where things are, who keeps what, and when?
As opposed to telling who?
In other words, what is there a procedures book? In other words, how you do it?
Well, I think that's what we were trying to get to, in that I think a lot of this, almost all of the information that we want is somewhere in the city.
Yes. Somewhere.
It exists in the city. And if the city wanted to, I believe you had conversation with Jim, with the city manager about this, is that correct?
We have our financial records are within the finance department, and they are within the OnBase, which is the record keeping software that the city uses, and that is relating to payments, the plan asset, anything that's within the plan asset that we present quarterly, whether it is the revenues, the payments, the invoices, the actuarial reports, are on our website as they're required to be disclosed, the league statements, quarterly, monthly, all of that supporting documentation is within the OnBase, which is our records keeping software, and we would just have to run it now through the city clerk if the city clerk is going to be the holder of the records. Now, that's the records that we have. Anything outside of the financial package is not within the finance department.
Also,
right, correct me if I'm wrong.
Right, plus we get the retiree packets to upload to the league for payment. So anything that has to do
with those plant assets and those statements, the ins and the outs, anything beyond that, we don't keep, we don't have. So I'm not sure what kind of records you have in addition to this that you would want.
I think we're kind of reaching middle ground here. So why don't we do this as a board? Why don't we ask for a couple of quotes or whatever with a scope of work that would be provided? You probably have a base proposal, David, that you guys send out.
Mm-hmm.
If we could get that, that includes this base of work. If we can get that proposal, and then we can then at the next meeting say, okay, this is what they would perform. Who does this currently? And then could we streamline this process to one person, and would it be beneficial to the board? It may not be.
League of Cities, the same thing.
Right, they'll be part of that proposal package. I mean, there's several companies that do it. I did some research in the past couple of weeks, and there are several vendors out there that do it, and they're all part of the circuit, for lack of a better term, that does these retirement pension boards, and it's always the same group of two or three people that are at these boards that I've come across. So the prices are pretty close. I mean, obviously, we got general ballpark type things, but I think let's look at the scope of services that can be provided, and then I think that we could sit back and go, okay, currently X handles this, and then we say, okay, right now 12 people handle different tasks, and it's going to be very difficult. So, but if we got this one person, it'll be one person. So we can look at that, and then, you know, determine. I mean, finance is still going to be involved. The clerk's office is still going to be involved. It's not like we're alienating anyone. I just think that it makes it a smoother operation if we have a process in place, you know, for people.
Well, I think the consensus is that we should get further information and evaluate. As Bob said, that's our job to do that. I think whatever we get from outside ought to also be shot to the city to see if they can do the same thing. From a perspective of, I feel more comfortable if we have a consolidated outside company valued, but also I get the same sense that maybe it's even better if it's within the city, because that's who we work with. That's who we have to satisfy. That's who provides us with the service at this time, a free service. But why don't we just request from Jeremy,
right,
and you, Dave,
yes,
and whoever else we can find, and get proposals to do this, and then match them against what the city can do.
Or is already performing.
Well, when you complain, but one of the complaints that we have is, yeah, they got it, but it hasn't been. You can't go to one person and say, this is what I need.
My only point is, we currently do not have a process, and we're lacking in that process. So we need to evaluate how we're going to fix that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's internally or externally, we just need to evaluate where we're lacking and move forward. If it's with the city, then so be it. If an outside firm, then we need to entertain
mm-hmm.
that. That's all
okay.
I'm saying.
Anybody have any comments?
The only comment I would have is if we get this information well in advance of the next meeting, not,
mm-hmm.
not like the day before,
right,
or a few days before, so we can absorb it.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, when do you think you could get us a
handful of days?
Handful of days.
Yeah.
Same thing?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Just a reminder for Sunshine, don't communicate amongst each other regarding the proposals until you're meeting in a
right.
Sunshine meeting.
You were addressing whom with that?
The board.
The board, yeah.
We never do anything.
Right.
Yeah. Just a reminder.
Anything wrong about these guys?
We don't like each other.
All right. I don't mean we know that we need a motion on that, but
no.
Anybody on the board have any disagreement, comments, or what? Anything from anybody else? What? Hmm?
Are you actually planning on sending out an actual RFP?
No.
No. Okay, I didn't know if that's...
No, I think right now they're actually looking for information to see what services are available and how
and
they're structured.
And that's what I didn't know, if you were building an RFP to get your information, or you're just going to call some people.
I think
once we receive what services are available, we tailor to what we need.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just want to confirm more with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was my
understanding. They would do the RFP for us and send out the release.
Right, that's why I was saying.
Okay. All right, we can move on then. One other issue. Oh, until we get this recording process done, I think the location of the future board meetings should be. We can wait on that.
Mm-hmm.
The 13th, excuse me, moving on to the next and the last issue we have here, I believe, is the 13th check, or the reallocation of non-vested repatriated funds under the share plan. Dave, you come up with a document here, or I don't know whether it's a revision to an ordinance or a suggested,
yes,
whatever. But however that goes, I'd like you to kind of brief us on what's involved and
okay.
how it can be done.
Okay, and I'll also give it, and I'm sorry if I mention some things that you're already aware of, but just I think if so that we can have a meaningful discussion on this, I think that there was some background information that that's important.
Ladies,
yes, you can. There should be 7 copies there. We can share one of those.
That's all. We can make other copies. Do you have a copy of this?
I don't yet.
You do not. Okay. No. Okay. Please. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this, it's a plan's in a funny position because we have to comply with 175. But I'm sure that you know that you, the trustees, attend some of the conferences, the FBPTA conferences, the Division of Retirement conferences. So you hear some things relating to 175, and then you also hear some things relating to qualified plans under the Internal Revenue Code. What you hear about 175 will apply to you, but what you hear about qualified plans under 401A of the Internal Revenue Code doesn't apply to this plan at all. this plan is a length of service award plan that's governed by Section 457 of the Internal Revenue Code, which is completely separate from Section 401A. So there are some, you'll hear out there, you'll hear discussions among other boards about qualification requirements that don't apply to you. the most important,
David,
which is...
Excuse me, you reviewed the letter that we got from the IRS,
yes.
Right? And what's in that IRS letter, or what the hell do they call that?
Yeah, private letter rule.
Private letter rule.
Yes.
Is what you're telling us now is in conformance with that IRS private letter rule.
So qualified plans receive what's called a favorable determination letter. It's a you apply for it on a different form, and it's a different letter that says your plan meets all of the qualification requirements under Section 401A of the Internal Revenue Code. What you've obtained is a private letter ruling, which is appropriate for a length of service award plan, and it says that your plan meets all the requirements of Section 457 E11 of the Internal Revenue Code, which applies, and that's what applies to you, and that allows you. That allows the contributions to be set aside and allocated for the members, but for the members not to be taxed in the year in which the allocations are set aside, and it allows the benefits to be tax deferred until retirement. So as long as the plan is in conformance with Section 457 of the Internal Revenue Code, then members aren't taxed on the contributions that are made, that are allocated on their behalf until retirement. So that's the importance of that. The difference is these length of service plans are particularly geared for volunteer departments, and so there's the idea that you have to strike a balance between allowing some retirement income. But not having it reach an amount that's so significant that it almost becomes pay. So one of the major differences between your plan and a 401 qualified plan is the benefit limits that apply. So for a qualified plan, for instance, for a defined benefit. The annual limit is over $160,000.
Well, we're limited to three.
Right. Exactly. So that's one of the main differences, is that the amount of benefit that you can obtain from the plan is much lower than it would be if you were a 401 a qualified plan, which you can't, you simply can't be. Because the qualified plan requires an employer-employee relationship. That's the position that the IRS has taken. So volunteer, you don't find volunteer plans having a qualified plan. So now to go to the limitations. So it was, for years, the limit was $3,000. The recent tax reform raised that limit to six. So that's very good news for this plan. It raised the limit to six. So now the limit, and that limit is what you can accrue for 1 year of service. So it's calculated differently from an annual benefit. It's not how much you're receiving annually, it's what is the present value of 1 year of service to this plan. So for instance, the actuary to calculate that will take the value over time of all the benefits that you're going to receive. He'll take the present value and simply divide it by the number of years of service that you get, and that number can't be more than 6,000. So it's very positive news that the limit has been raised to 6,000 instead of 3,000.
I don't know that provides any particular monetary value to it. That change says that when payment is due, if it exceeds $3,000, you have to roll it to the next year, and when we paid out under the share plan, the maximum it took to make out the whole payment, no matter what it was like 2.5 years.
Mm. Okay, well, actually, that's one of the changes. And if you'll turn to the document that I just distributed, uh-huh. So you'll see on page 2, under section 13.611.
Are we on the same document?
Should be this one.
That's right.
It's this yes. One. Okay. And you'll see under.
Is that the last one?
Maybe the last one.
Yeah.
It's right here, sir. Charlie.
Okay.
This is what they're talking about.
Right. Under 13.136.12.
Yeah.
So you said that they're striking 3,000 and make it 6,000.
Yeah.
And then you'll see under C, it shows it. There's been a section added that says how you test for this limit. So in effect, as you said, Charlie, it has until now we've been testing as an annual benefit. What's the amount that you're receiving? Is it less than 3,000 or not? But now we have to test it differently. So you'll take what this section is saying is that you have to take the present value of the defined benefit portion of it.
When you say the value, you mean we're operating on $65 per month per year.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
No. So let's say $65 per month per year. So the actuary would project that out,
yeah.
Over an expected lifetime. That's if you were going to retire today. They'll project that out over an expected lifetime, then take the actual present value of that, and then divide it by the number of years of service to determine whether you're above the 6,000 limit for 1 year of accrual, for 1 year of credit. Is that?
I understand what you're saying, but I don't think we come anywhere near that.
Okay. Well. Hopefully not. I have asked Doug. I sent an email to Doug asking him, you know, how far we are from that limit.
Yeah.
But that's what's driving this question about the 13th check, if I'm not mistaken. Part of it is the fact that we're getting we get reserves building up because there is a limit.
We took care of that by the share plan.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing we're talking about now is the value of the share plan with regard to the non-vested repatriated money that was accumulated for people who never vested for the program. So instead of that money going back into just the actives, we want to take that portion and put it into, initially I said COLA, but the 13 checks sound like a better deal if we work it out. And that was the driving force. But I think the board did, any concern about exceeding the $3,000 limit.
Okay, my understanding was that part of the question was how to get these funds, how to get funds distributed, because we have members who are building significant benefits.
Bob,
that may soon be coming up on
yeah.
Limits.
No, I don't want to interrupt you.
Oh,
please.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That would be a good time to answer that question. If,
okay. All right. What this basically does is it changes kind of the way we've been looking at the benefits. The 6,000, by the way, also is COLA. In other words, it's... it will increase over time also. Right? In other words, we're starting at the law starts at $6,000, but in each year there'll be a computation very much like how your Social Security is computed. And that will add to in amounts of $500 to the $6,000 amount as it goes on and on. The other part about this is using it, what we'll need to be doing is figuring out the present value of this to make sure that nobody goes over no individual account goes over this 6,000 or 6,500 or whatever the number is during that particular year. The Internal Revenue Service will publish each year, usually starting around September, October, November, they will issue the rates for the coming for the year, coming year. And it's something that they do each year for all plans. Okay. I hope that was in English.
I still don't see this. You know, the $3,000 per year is cumulative. In other words, in if you have 10 years of service, you have up to $30,000 that you can get in any given year.
Okay, that was my next question. Yeah. So
and even under the $6,000 rule, if you have $30,000 worth of income for the year, you can't catch it all.
No, that's
in one payment. So
that's what I'm saying. It's changed.
Okay,
that has changed now.
Okay.
That the way that you test for the benefit has changed.
Okay.
So it won't be that if you have what you're looking for is what is the amount of benefit accrued for 1 year of service.
Yeah.
That's the way.
It's not a. It's in other words, Charlie. It's no longer the payment that counts. Okay. It's what's accrued to the beneficiary that counts.
That's right.
In the year of the accrual.
So
give me a.
So let's say.
Example.
Let's say.
Well, I'm a member of the force. Okay.
Yeah.
And each year there would be a test to say, okay, can I? You know, am I at $6,000 or not on a present value, given the fact of my age and.
For any given year?
For any given year.
So what's going to happen?
So, but that does not say, you understand, if I retire, okay, it's not limiting me to $6,000 of benefit in a given
right.
year.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm whatever my benefit is going to be my benefit. And that's
yeah.
what I'm going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying
the accrual.
Rules.
Right, which I think so. If your benefit, if you've been with the department 10 years, and
mm-hmm.
now the limit is at 6,000 times the 10 years of service, they can't exceed $60,000 per year of accruals.
What will happen is that you'll have your plan have a defined benefit, and you have the supplemental benefit. So with regard to the defined benefit, the actuary is going to determine. So your defined benefits is $65.
Yeah,
right.
$65.
Right. So the actuary is going to project that out over expected lifetime, and then take the actual present value of that. So you'll have a sum, and they'll add that sum to whatever the value of the supplemental benefit is. But the grand total will then be divided by the total number of years of service that you have. And that number cannot be greater than 6,000.
So, okay, I see what you're saying. So if X person had $100,000 in accrued benefits, but and they served 10 years, then that's 10,000 that's over the limit.
Right.
I got you.
So that's if the present value of their benefit, the benefit that they're going to receive over the lifetime is 100,000 and they had 10 years of service, then the benefit is over the limit.
Obviously, you should have a round number.
Right, sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're. So that's the. That's one question, and that was part of. And I apologize if I misunderstood, but I thought my understanding was that was part of the reason why we were looking at this 13th check, and then the other part of it being forfeitures. That
mm-hmm.
there's been some discomfort with re-injecting the forfeitures right into the supplemental plan. So, but the two, gave some thought and just, this is just for discussion, but so there's a number of different ways you can deal with the forfeitures. At the last meeting, we talked about possibly creating a 13th check and adding it to the defined benefit portion of the plan and having that funded partially by forfeitures. What I've done here, here's one version, one possibility would be to eliminate forfeitures And that's what I've, what,
you have a copy?
Does everyone have a copy? I can share this one.
Can you pass me?
Okay. So I've gone through, I've also made some changes in this document to reflect the new benefit limits. But if you turn to the fourth page at the top, and you'll see the highlighted change. It says members hired on or after effective date shall be entitled to allocations beginning on the first valuation date. So the idea would be, instead of having allocations begin for non-vested members and then they leave and then there's a forfeiture, the idea would be that allocations would begin for members once they've reached vesting. But once they reach vesting, then their allocation will include all the years of service prior to vesting. So that would eliminate forfeitures entirely. And it seems to me that that would be sort of the cleanest way to go about it. And do you have a...
I'm lost.
Okay, what's... tell me where you're lost, Charles, please.
I'll tell you what, I need to read this. I think there's a time to play with it. Any other board members have any comments you want to make?
I understand what you're saying as far as a person from day zero to 5 year
right.
Is not accruing any funds, technically,
yes.
On paper.
Right.
So if they were to leave at 4 years, there would be no forfeiture funds.
That's
funds
right.
were never issued to that person.
That's right.
But on day 5 year, when they become vested, they get the 5 years of accrued funds to them
right.
into an account because they are vested now.
That's right.
Okay, so that those funds are guaranteed funds if they make the 5 year birthday.
That's right.
And if they do not, then there's no funds to be redistributed because there was never a forfeiture.
That's exactly. So we will eliminate forfeitures.
Eliminate with this.
And then the same, of course, with regard to the investment gain. So the similar.
I'm sorry. I have to answer this.
Okay.
So a similar.
You're listening to the minutes. Later, be careful because it's right next to the microphone. Don't put that one in.
Right.
I have to answer to nature. They want to build
some.
So you're treating the forfeiture the same as you treated everything anyway. Nobody, you know, actives accrue their money during the first year, second year, third year. But it's in a fund, and it doesn't become a personal issue until the 50 years reach.
Right.
But it's still there, earning interest in it.
That's right.
The only problem I do see with something like this is, let's say someone comes in and does 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back in 10 years, and they do another two. You know, at that point, you know, now we're pulling in the other three, so they make their five, because they never lose their years once they put them in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people do that in the past. They leave for a time, they get hired at a job, and then when they come back, then they become vested.
I think they had to put in 2 years in order to make that bridge.
Yeah,
but
that's
it's accumulated.
So.
In other words, you couldn't do that five times.
Right.
And work a year and then leave and then come back another year.
Right, and I get that, but let's say they
yeah.
put in 3 years and they
yeah.
leave for 10 because they went and got a career and then they
yeah.
come back to volunteer
yeah.
when they retire. Then they put in another two
yeah.
and they covered both of those bases and
mm-hmm.
then they would get their five. But yet, the funds that were allocated but not distributed to them
mm-hmm.
are now having to be used, and if the plan's in a different spot in 10, 15 years,
mm-hmm.
you know,
how do you fund it?
Is the fund going to be funds available for them because they're not technically set aside? Like in the current situation, they're currently allocated and set aside.
Right.
They're taken out of the actuarial dollars that are projected out, so it doesn't hurt us and if they come back in 10, 12 years to become vested.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this plan, I think, may hurt us because are they still going to be setting aside the funds And then in 10, 15 years, are we still going to be 130% funded? You know, we would never know. So that may be an issue to discuss.
So if they came back, they left for 10 years and came back, they would be, it would just increase the denominator. Is that?
Well, currently, like with this plan, you're saying there was never funds issued, so the funds would just basically go back into
the general fund.
The general fund,
correct.
So if that person ever decides to come back, and we've had this happen, that's why I bring this up, and they do get vested at that time, we now have to take those funds out of the general fund for those 3 years that they did, prepare for that, and then if they become vested again, now all those funds go to that person. My only concern is if we're not as handsomely funded as we are today, mm-hmm. in 10, 15 years when that person comes back, would we be able to fund that person without getting ourselves into financial trouble?
Wouldn't it just reduce the total shares or the amount of each share in the plan?
Are you only referring to the share plan?
Yes,
or,
okay, only to the supplement.
Okay, yeah. So not defined benefit.
No, the defined benefit would still
There's
continue
money for
to,
defined benefit,
that's
said.
Right.
Okay.
Would still continue to function in the same way.
It sounds like you need a condition, and the condition would be that you would only fund it if the plan could actually pay it at the time.
No, we said that in the beginning.
We could also say something that, you know, do you want to make it a 5 consecutive year for the supplement plan, you know, for the share plan? And that's, you know, you benefit from that after 5 consecutive years.
Right, that would certainly be possible. That would make it a lot easier to calculate.
Because in that way, you're not kind of having to have a side kitty of money for the what ifs
right.
that never come back. And then you have this 3 years of money sitting there that, oh, they may come back one day. You know?
So what we'd have in the end is we'd create a 13th check under the defined benefit portion. And that on the first page, it's I've suggested what the conditions might be in
Why
section 2.
Why are we going
two.
Into the defined benefit part?
Just for ease of reference, just for sake of reference.
The way the share plan is structured, there is no share plan if there's no money.
That's right.
And what we're talking about is that money that's in the share plan, not a part of the defined benefit.
That's right.
The 13th check, if we're going to make it a part of the defined benefit, we may have some issues with the city.
Well, I've stated some conditions that would protect, and this is what we discussed at the end of the last meeting, that the 13th check would only be payable if it's not in any way requiring a contribution from the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that condition I've stated in paragraph 2. I've stated it to say that if there's no contribution that would be required from the city, then it can be paid. You could state different, that's just a suggested
uh-huh.
a suggested condition. You could come up with others. But the idea
is the 13th check typically associated with the defined benefit?
Yes.
Or do you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So that would, again, coming back, the advantage of having a 13th check is that you can decide who it would apply to, all retirees, for instance, which would be normal, and then that would help as far as, you know, I don't have the figures yet of the extent to which we were running up on benefit limit problems. But if that's the case, then the 13th check would be a way to use the money that spread it out in a broader mm-hmm. spectrum so that we're less likely to have numbers. And so the money's being used, but less likely to have numbers, cause numbers to run up on the benefit limit.
Yeah. Each year would have a defined benefit. Each year would have an accumulated non-vested reserve.
Yes.
Okay. Only related to the share plan. And for instance, in 2015, that was $18,000.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, it was $47,000. In 2017, it's $32,000. So it's going to vary.
Sure.
But it's substantial.
Yes.
And that's the amount that would be distributed among active, retired, and so on. The rest of the share money would stay just as exactly as it is,
mm-hmm.
only for active. And this was the repatriated amount. But you're taking a different look at it. You say, well, if we use the accumulated years, in other words, you accumulate for the first 3, 4, 5 years, then you use it up.
Right. So what I've tried to do, again, and part of the concern for me from which I was working was the idea that how are we going to spreading mm-hmm. money out, getting some money out of the plan and into the hands of members without bringing us quickly toward the benefit limit. So that was the idea. The 13th check is mostly to accomplish that,
mm-hmm.
And then the changes that I've suggested to the supplemental plan is really to assuage the discomfort that seems to exist with regard to forfeitures. There seems to be some concern about using forfeitures to increase the supplemental benefit of the remaining members. And so the changes that I've suggested to the supplemental plan is just to remove the forfeitures altogether. So that issue is definitively eliminated. But again, a member would go along through his first 5 years
mm-hmm.
without having any allocation
mm-hmm.
in the supplemental plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the person's reached 5 years,
and
they'll have the allocation for all of the 5 years that they've served. And they'll be vested.
I'm not sure whether that's any different from what we're doing.
Well, you don't have forfeiture. Right.
Well,
now,
suppose he leaves.
He's already vested.
No, suppose he's not vested.
He has to make
the vesting until.
That money's still in the account. You're calling it something different now.
Yes, indeed, it's gone. But that's exactly what we're doing. We're calling it something different. It's money in the account instead
mm-hmm.
of money that's been allocated to one individual. So that will allow us to remove the word forfeiture from everywhere, from every place in this plan, which then I would think would eliminate the discomfort that you feel.
I'm not sure I have any discomfort with it, but all right. Bob, you got any comments?
Not really. I know, at least.
Okay.
I guess with respect to the 13th check, I mean, my real concern would be what that does to the actuarial report and how, that we're still, because we're running on a pretty good sized balance here, $1 million. And I don't know if we're going to keep that forever. It's unlikely as the city grows and as the plan grows. But
so is the income.
All the same, the income also comes up. But, one of the governing tenets here is that we don't, of the deal, so to speak, is that we don't ask the city for money. Plain and simple.
Yeah, right. Criteria.
Okay. And that to me is where it's at. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I look at it from that standpoint. Because we're not beholden to the word. We're not asking the city to come up with cash. Plain and simple.
Again, the first condition on the in paragraph two, the condition, the right. number one condition is
that, see that
it will only be paid
if there's a fund.
If there's funds,
if
right?
No money,
there's no required
pay.
City contribution, right? Yeah. And this is something that we can have to get an idea of how much the 13th check would cost. We can we can ask Doug to take a look at that and to see to compare that to the amount. To the amount of money that we're sort of building up every year, so that we'll have an idea if the 13th check is going to slowly cause our reserves to diminish, or if it's going, or if the reserves are going to continue to build despite the 13th check. And then, as I've also stated in I think it's paragraph one, it will not be a vested benefit, and if the 13th check, if with experience, we see that the 13th check is causing, is costing too much, and quickly causing the reserves to diminish. Then we can.
Well, it can't cost too much if it's only using excess funds.
All right.
Because there would be no payment.
That's right.
So it would just stop. This is why our actuary fees are so high. Just so you
know. Right. Exactly.
I don't know. I don't see the point in creating a whole new account, a whole new system, and set up for something that may or may not be.
Well, actually, to your point, it wouldn't be using only excess funds. This would be a new. This would be a benefit that would be generally that would be required to be funded generally, as it's any other benefit. So it wouldn't be just from excess funds.
Yeah.
Well,
it
should be.
Yeah. The point is, I'd like to see what what this 13th check does to the actuarial report.
It's going to, it's going to be a problem.
Okay.
I think there's a liability that we shouldn't put against the board.
What about the share plan? What does that do to it? In total? I mean, I just see this as an extension to the share plan. If we don't have the 13th check, then that money is going to go the way it's been going. There's no more, no less. It's just spent a different way.
If you're only going to use forfeited funds, then it needs to say clearly you're only going to use forfeited funds. Because the way it's presented now, it is
a benefit.
Yeah,
you are on the hook for it.
It will not be.
You will.
No. You're saying as written. We didn't see this stuff today.
Right. I get it.
Okay.
I get it. But
our philosophy has been.
Right.
There is no guaranteed benefit. Even under the share plan, there's no money in the share plan, there's no payment to anybody.
Right.
And this is an adjunct to that. We've had this discussion, and we also said, when we were talking about this in the beginning, if there's no money, there's no money. And it is, and you're true, there's no benefit, and you have to be careful.
Onus, but you have to be, the verbiage is because you're going to set this board and these funds to an obligation for many years to come, right or wrong.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. Yeah. And we could quite simply say in it that the 13th check will be fully funded from forfeitures. That's what we could. Again, my understanding was that we wanted to sort of remove the idea of allocating forfeitures to increase.
Yeah, but
benefits.
It's not going to be fully funded anywhere. It's going to be a payout of excess reserve, and we're not going to fund it. If there's nothing there, there's no funding.
Right. When I say funded, I mean the cost is being paid from forfeitures.
Okay.
But my understanding was that we wanted to move away from having references in the plan of benefits being increased by forfeitures, which is there's certainly.
What's your pleasure, gentlemen, on this? We want to take and review this.
Yeah,
you
want to
give us some more information on this? And I don't know where to go with it until we get something we can understand. I didn't mean that. Something that we can interpret as we feel it needs to be interpreted. Can we table this?
Yeah, John, this was your idea. I mean, I don't know the need for it, but you can table whatever you want.
This was really for discussion purposes.
Yeah.
At the end of last meeting, we talked about what are some different ways. So this was coming from me, some ideas of how you might be able to structure it. If there's a concern, it might be easier for the board members to say, well, here's what I was thinking, here's, and then I can draft that.
No, I definitely understand. You know, I appreciate you coming up, but I understand where you're coming from. You know, I just don't want this to turn into a liability, long-term liability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, it will require an ordinance change.
Absolutely.
Because the way the current ordinance is written, and it will require, and we have to make sure this conflicts with the IRS private letter ruling.
Mm-hmm.
That they issued for the share plan.
That's right.
Because they were very specific. I mean, how long did it take us to get that ruling? You know, and how much money did we invest in that? And so that's another thing.
A lot
of money, right? So if we continuously go and swim in circles and change it for, you know,
Well, that's the that's the other point. Make a very good point is that some concerns have been raised, but as far as I'm aware, the plan hasn't been amended since the private letter ruling was issued. The benefit of the private letter ruling,
mm-hmm.
is that you can rely upon it.
Well,
so
before we present any type of ordinance, mm-hmm. change, and let's say we get to a spot, you have to. There's no what ifs, because
that's
it goes
right.
in front of council. If the council feels that they at some point will be on the hook for a dime, it's
there,
done.
Right.
You know, so that has to be a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I quite frankly, I think that if there was something in the plan that could pose a problem, right now it's the IRS's problem and not ours, because they reviewed our plan.
Nothing's ever
got right. Well, they reviewed our plan and they gave us a private letter ruling that we are entitled to rely upon.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, if we start changing plan design, then we open the door for the IRS to say this is no longer.
Well, the private letter ruling runs the life of the code, and the code has changed.
Mm.
Okay. And so, yeah, there's got to be some amendments to the ordinance with respect to the code. We've got some of these things right in here, the 457 limitation. So,
well, the right, it's
sooner or later we're going to amend this ordinance.
Sure.
Yes.
The question is, do we want to add some more juice to it, and what will that cost us long term?
Right.
Now,
I think that's the answer.
We will want to look at, there are some amendments that we'll want to make in any of,
mm-hmm.
they said there are references to the 3,000 limitation in the plan. We would like to update those.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is
but unfortunately, we're reactive to the IRS.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Public, are we done with this conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody's agreed we'll take this or that. Anybody from the public have any comments?
Mm-hmm.
Anything that the board has to discuss that's not on the agenda? No. Anybody want to make the motion? I think we're done.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Done. Thank you.